Picture this. You're standing alone on a stage with bright lights in your eyes and a clock counting down the minutes. Hundreds of eyes are trained on you. The silence is deafening and your palms are sweaty. You can hear someone cough in the back and another clears their throat. Your throat closes up. You can't even choke your first word out. Your eyes blur as you try to look at your speaking notes and your heart beats too fast. This moment, the fear of public speaking, talking in public, is one that many of us know too well. And it's not just the fear of forgetting your words, it's the fear of being judged, of not measuring up. But what if I told you that it doesn't have to be this way? What if I told you that you can eliminate this fear and transform it into a source of strength? Well, joining me today is Andrea Pacini, a seasoned presentation coach who has helped people from all walks of life turn their public speaking anxieties into impactful, confident messages. With a history of coaching over 500 TEDx speakers and partnering with corporations like Microsoft, Andrea has proven that the fear of the stage can be conquered. So in this episode, we'll explore Andrea's approach to turning public speaking from a blinding fear to an opportunity to connect and inspire. We'll discuss practical tips and inspiring success stories so that you can see how anyone can become a powerful speaker. So if the thought of speaking in public has ever held you back, you're in the right place. Welcome to De-Stress Your Business, the podcast where we show you how to get incredible results in your business without constant stress. I'm Alexis Kingsbury, a serial entrepreneur and founder at Air Manual. And today I'm joined by Andrea Pacini. Welcome to the podcast, Andrea.
Thank you, Alexis. Thank you very much. It's great to be here. That was one of the best introductions, podcast introductions in the history of podcast introductions. So thank you very much.
Well, that's very kind. I'd love to take full credit for that, but that is a combination of excellent process, some AI, and some good review steps. But thank you very much. Andrea, I want people to understand a bit about where you've come from, how you essentially started Ideas on Stage, before we kind of dive into the area of public speaking. So just to give people some context and why this is an area that you find so interesting and easy to navigate, like give us some background.
Sure. So public speaking, presenting, communication in general is an area of interest. I'm super passionate about these things because when I was a little kid growing up in Italy, I grew up in a family of very small business owners. My parents have always run their very small business together. They still do. And so as a kid, I saw their challenges because raising four kids while trying to run a business is not easy. But I also saw their spark and entrepreneurial mindset and proactive approach to life. And so that's why I always wanted to be an entrepreneur, to run my own thing. Now, I don't know about you, Alexis, but for me, that remained a dream for a long time because before doing what I do now, I tried many things, starting many projects, all of them failed. But it was useful because in that process, what I realized was that there are so many great ideas that fail, not because of the ideas themselves, but just because of the way they are presented.
Agreed.
And that's why then, to cut it short for you, that's why eventually I became a presentation coach. That's why my mission is to stop great ideas from failing just because of the way they are presented. My vision, Alexis, is to help hundreds of thousands of business leaders inspire their audiences, increase their influence, and make a positive impact in the world.
Love it. Yeah. And I think I love your point there around, it's about making sure those ideas, those great ideas, can actually see the light of day and are put in their best light. I think it's really, really important. And yet, one of the things that holds us back from making that happen is that, like, most people see public speaking as something that's stressful and scary. So perhaps if we start with perhaps a bit about your own early experiences with public speaking, like, were you scared or were you someone that's like, no, this doesn't terrify me, I'll just get straight up there?
So on the one hand, if I think about like my days at university, doing projects, presenting back to your fellow students, on the one hand, it has always been something that I enjoyed. But on the other hand, there was always a bit of nerves or stress or anxiety, fear, whatever we want to call it. And even today, that's what I do for a living, but I always feel nervous before presenting. So for me, it's not really about overcoming the nerves. That was true when I was at university. It's still true today. And it's for myself. That's what I see with our clients as well. It's not really about overcoming the nerves, because the nerves at different levels, perhaps, but they will always be there. Mark Twain apparently said that there are only two types of speakers, those who get nervous and those who are liars. So the nerves, the stress when we are in front of an audience will always be there. Of course, there is something we can do. There are practical things we can do in terms of preparation for us to not necessarily overcome the nerves, but control them in a more positive way.
Really nice. And so for people who are, because there'll be a variety of listeners to this, there'll be some that avoid public speaking wherever they can. And I have, you know, entrepreneur friends who they, even if they win an award and they're asked, like, come and collect your award, and even the idea of just walking up, shaking a hand, taking the award, sitting back down again is enough to make their, you know, palms sweaty and heart beating and so on. Never mind then perhaps doing some kind of Q&A about, you know, what have they learned and so on. And that's such a shame, because it gives an opportunity for them, their messages to be heard, their ideas to be heard, for other people to benefit, for all these sorts of things. And then, of course, there'll be other people who say, actually, I'd really like to do more speaking, and I see it as a big potential source of marketing and leads for my business. But I just, yeah, I fear getting to a bigger and bigger stage. And so as a result, I'll play very small. So given that we've got that range, like, how can someone start to tackle their fear of public speaking? Like, what's the first step that you'd recommend for them to kind of begin transforming their mindset and skills?
Okay, so the first step is something very simple that, believe it or not, many people don't do. Even, and I'm not talking about students, I'm talking about experienced entrepreneurs, business leaders. So the first step is making sure that in preparation for a presentation, for example, we rehearse. Rehearsing is super, super important, and we'll get there. So let me mention a few practical things that we can do also as first steps. But then I can tell you already that none of these things will help unless we rehearse. And we can talk about the importance of rehearsing as well. So a few practical things. Water. So I think you mentioned it in the introduction. Often when we feel stressed or nervous in front of an audience, that creates a bit of a dry mouth. So we can have a glass of water with us at all times, and that can help. And exactly. And then movement. When we are nervous, that creates a lot of energy in excess, or too much energy that flows throughout our body. You want to take some of that energy out. So for example, rather than waiting for your turn to be called to do the Q&A, to do the presentation, to collect the award, then if the context allows you to do that, move a little bit. So that's one way to get some of the energy out. Breathing is super important. So for example, before any, I say presentation, but you're right, Alexis, it could be any situation where we need to communicate some ideas. When I can, I always do a bit of a warm-up routine, if you want, and their routine includes breathing. So I breathe in through my nose and I count to three. I breathe out through my mouth and I count to six. And it's important that when you breathe out, you make that longer than when you breathe in. That helps you calm down. Also, what I see with myself, with the clients as well, is that when we are nervous, when we give a presentation, it's especially at the very beginning of the presentation. So what if, for example, you include a moment of interaction with the audience? Now, it's not always possible, but in many cases, it is possible. You include a moment of interaction. It could be as simple as asking a question or inviting them to do something right from the start. that moves the attention away from you and it moves it to the audience. So that's another thing. And but again, all of these things will help a little bit, but on top of that, we need to rehearse. And when I say rehearsing, it's not about thinking about what to say. That's what most people do. Most people don't do anything, but if they do, they practice, which means that, for example, they open up their PowerPoint, they go through their slides. As they do that, they think about what to say. Okay, here I'm going to talk about this, and here I'm going to talk about that. Rehearsing is a different level. Rehearsing means repeating your presentation out loud from the very beginning to the very end without stopping, as if you have a real audience in front of you. I'll close with this, Alexis. One of my friends, I don't know if you know Mark LaRouste here in the UK, and for his TEDx talk a few years ago, which is now being viewed by more than 1 million people at TEDx Cardiff. By the way, it's connected to your area of expertise. He talks about what people don't tell you about entrepreneurship, the reality behind entrepreneurship. It's a great talk. And he told me that he rehearsed 21 times before, so the 21 days before the talk, at least one rehearsal per day in 21 different locations in London to 21 different audiences. Wow. And he told me that that kind of preparation made a huge difference for the success of his presentation. So many practical things we can do, but also we need to rehearse.
That's really powerful. And I think it's interesting there that, as you say, you sort of delineate between rehearsal and practice. And I think I can see where, you know, I've definitely in my own experience of giving presentations, I've seen a role for practice where I am perhaps testing a particular section of my presentation, making sure it flows, checking the timing of, you know, do I need to cut a load out? Because often I find that the act of even designing and preparing the presentation is quite a big exercise in just condensing and working out your message so that you can reliably reduce it to a certain amount of time, because that's something that I've seen fluster a lot of speakers, is where they suddenly realize that they have used 3/4 of their time and they are still only 10% of the way through their presentation. Interestingly, I was at an event last week and there was poor speaker up there. She's doing a good job. And then like one of the organizers basically flagged her down and went, you know, you're coming up for time. And she was like, I thought I had 40 minutes. And she's like, no, you got 20. And you're like, oh, okay. And so I think a lot of people have overtime. So I can see the value of sort of practicing to sort that time in. The rehearsal, like the way that you've just described it there in the case of Mark, like rehearsing but in front of different audiences, I've definitely seen that like with my own presentations where perhaps I've done some of it as a webinar and then I've done it for a small audience and then a bigger audience. And I suppose in many ways I haven't thought of those as rehearsals for the bigger presentation, but that's quite a useful way of thinking about it. But how do you, for someone who's perhaps thinking this will be the first time that they're going to do it, perhaps it's the first time that this particular piece of content or this particular presentation is going to see the light of day, what would count as rehearsing? Would you still say like you need to find an audience, whether it's your team, whether it's family, friends, your pets, like what constitutes a sufficient rehearsal for it to really give enough value?
Yeah, so rehearsing doesn't have to be super complicated. It could be just you at home or in the office repeating your presentation out loud. Now the principle is, and this is best practice, we should try as much as possible and rehearse in conditions which are as close as possible to the real conditions. So that's the ideal situation. And when I say conditions, it could be physical conditions if possible, but sometimes, I mean, if it's online, very easy, then it can be done in most cases. If it's in person, it very much depends. Sometimes it's not possible. But even like mental conditions. So for example, if you know that you will be presenting while standing, then don't rehearse the presentation while being seated. Just stand up. Even if you're at home, stand up and rehearse your presentation. Or if you know that you will be using a particular tool, particular piece of software, and you haven't used that piece of software in a while, then open up your slides, just create a setup which is as close as possible to the actual setup that you will use there. So of course, if you have an opportunity to test, to rehearse your presentation in front of colleagues, in front of a real audience and get feedback, that's amazing. That's the ideal situation. You don't have to do that all the time. It very much depends on what you can do. But even if you are at home, rehearsing a few times, repeating it out loud from the beginning to the end without stopping, that's great. And going back to the idea of rehearsing in the real world, to use an analogy, what I'm a football fan, for example, and what a lot of football coaches do is in preparation for penalties, then they let their players rehearse the whole thing. So rather than just the penalty kick itself, so when you get to penalties at the end of a match, for example, you start from the middle of the pitch and then you walk maybe 30-40 meters, and as you do that, pressure builds up, and then you get close to the goalkeeper, you look at the goalkeeper, and then you give it a try. So it's the whole thing, and they do it on purpose, because if you just practice the last bit, then in the real situation, there would be other things that you haven't practiced. And so if possible, rehearsing in the real world. But if it's not possible to rehearse in the real world, it's always possible to practice and rehearse. Because you're right, Alexis, it's not that practice is not useful. Practice is super, super useful. But what I'm saying is that in addition to practicing, we should rehearse. Now, how many times? There is no magic number. It depends. What works for me perhaps doesn't work for you. What I can tell you, though, for our listeners, two pieces of advice. One is that it's very hard for anyone to internalize the message. It's not about memorizing. We can talk about it if there's an interest, but it's not about memorizing your message, but you do want to internalize it. You need to own your content. It's very hard to do that unless you've rehearsed at least three times. So yeah. Three tends to be the minimum number. For most people, it takes about 10 rehearsals for them to be able to internalize that message.
Yeah, and I think that's certainly been my experience, that the more rehearsals that I've done, as you say, like the more confident I am with the content. But as you say, it's the internalization of the message. So there are certain parts of the presentation that I'll get so comfortable with. I know exactly not only the words that I'm going to use, but the tonality and how I'm going to deliver it, and even the expression on my face, the hand signal, everything. And there'll be some parts where, for example, often I'll do this for like stories, like client stories. I know the client story. It's internalized enough that I don't need the exact words. And it's fine if I drop a word or switch a word, because it's the story that I'm getting out. And often, actually, for telling a story, I find that worrying too much about specific words can actually trip me up. Whereas actually just thinking about that person, the situation they're in, and so on, is really powerful. So I completely buy into that. And it's funny, the rehearsal process can almost generate generate nerves as well, right? And I remember a particular presentation I was giving. It was at the Hilton Wembley, and it was a big presentation. There's probably, I don't know, 300, 400 people going to be in the audience. And I remember rehearsing on the balcony, sort of set back behind these exhibition stands. So people couldn't really see me, but if someone popped out to have a phone call, then they would, and they would hear me. And I remember with my laptop there doing the rehearsal, and someone kind of walked out, and I immediately like hushed my voice and kind of stopped. And then I had this moment of surreal sense of, hang on, I'm about to deliver this in front of 400 people, and I'm embarrassed to do this in front of one. And it was just this moment where I was just like, don't be silly. And I just sort of restarted and went, no, it doesn't matter who can hear, I'm delivering this. If they happen to hear it now and then they hear it again, it's fine. And so, but it did remind me that even that practice of rehearsal does bring up nerves. Like I've done rehearsals in my office where I know my wife can hear, and that's enough to create some of that feeling. And I think when you talk about like the penalty spot kind of example, I think that's a nice illustration of, you've got to rehearse that whole thing. You're trying to break through those nerves and create more comfort there. What about if someone's done those rehearsals, they've kind of forced themselves to do that, because I appreciate for a lot of people that's a hard thing to do, and they've done the rehearsals, they've got to that point, and now they're there, and now they're having that moment of terror. They're having that moment where they perhaps there was an event that I spoke at where quite early on they'd had a technical issue, and as a result there were some other factors too, but the audience, something was off, and every speaker could sense it, the audience could sense it, there wasn't engagement, there wasn't the rapport, and so everything was falling a bit flat. And I remember just having that moment of, oh no, like this could go really bad. And in fact, I remember even talking to the MC, who normally an MC just slaps you in the back and says you've got this and so on. And he basically said, I don't know what to tell you, it's really tough out there, which you don't want to hear just before you go on. Like, let's say you're in that moment. Rehearsals, that's the time for rehearsals has gone. How do you catch yourself? How do you catch yourself and create that that calm before you go on?
So for me, there are a couple of things there. One is that I'm a big fan of controlling what you can control. And you can control, there are lots of things that you can control before that moment. And if you've done the right kind of preparation from any perspective, preparation in terms of having a compelling message that is simple for the audience to understand, clear for them to follow, relevant to them and their needs, a message which is also original, enjoyable. Preparation also in terms of delivery, because it's not just the message, it's also how you deliver your message. Preparation in terms of slide design, for example, we don't have to use slides or any kind of visual support all the time, but when we do, we need to do it well. I often see the typical death by PowerPoint with lots of text and bullet points. People can't read and listen at the same time. So there are many things we can do that we can control before the moment. And and I think we should focus the attention on that, on the preparation before the moment. If we do that, at the very, very least, 80% of the time, the rest takes care of itself. Now, one thing I love doing in preparation for any presentation, a small one, a big one, and it's something I mentioned recently, just a moment ago, which is a warm-up sequence, a warm-up ritual. I know a lot of professional speakers, and all of them have their own way of warming up before a presentation. My warm-up takes 1 minute, and it's something that I've borrowed from, I don't know again if you know Lee Warren, great speaker here in the UK. He's the author of The Busy Person's Guide to Great Presenting. And the sequence is this. So you want to split into two parts, body and voice. So first you want to do something with your body, and then you want to do something to warm up your voice. Body, so now I'm not standing. And also there will be, I guess, people who will only be listening to this, not watching, I assume. But just to give everyone an idea. So from a body perspective, you want to just first ground yourself, and then you want to stretch a little bit, and make sure, the most important thing is make sure that your neck and shoulders are not tense. And then you want to start opening up your chest as well. Again, good for breathing. And then you want to do the breathing that I mentioned earlier. You breathe in through the nose, you count to three. You breathe out through the mouth, and you count to six. And you do that 3 to 5 times. That's it. The whole body thing takes 30 seconds. And then you also want to warm up your voice. So one way to do that is a few things. One is you want to make a sound like, so you want to warm up the muscles here. So that's one thing. Another thing is you want to say a sentence that includes a lot of M's and N's, the letters M and N. And if you exaggerate it, it helps warm up the muscles. Lee Warren suggests in his book the sentence, remember the money. And you want to exaggerate it. Remember the money. You say that again 3 to 5 times. Then you want to say a sentence that requires more concentration. Again, we want to get closer and closer to the concentration we need to have in the moment. Again, the sentence that Lee mentions is, when you write copy, you have the right to copyright the copy you write. And there are many other examples, but you need to think about when you write copy, you have the right to copyright the copy you write. And you say that a few times. And again, I do these things as I'm walking a little bit for the energy thing that we mentioned earlier. And then finally, you want to say the first sentence or the first paragraph of your presentation. That's your introduction. And you're ready to go. Then, of course, Alexis, I'm not saying that if you do that, then you will never have any problems and issues. Sometimes there are issues. There are technical issues. Yeah. If technology can fail, it probably will. That's the attitude that we should have. But there are things that we can do, that we can control before the moment. And if we do that, in many cases, the rest will take care of itself.
Yeah, I really like that. And I think that clarity over that, having a warm-up and having something that you do, I can see warms you up because of the nature of the activity, but also particularly if you add that warm-up to your rehearsal, I can see how it almost kind of smooths you in like each time, because it's almost like your presentation doesn't start on stage. Your presentation starts off stage with your warm-up. And you've already nailed that. Now you just have to walk up some steps, go and stand in the middle of the stage, look out at people and carry on with the next bit. And I think, as you say, rehearsing those things makes all of that so much easier. So yeah, I really like those. I'm interested as well, like, I mean, you've had such a wealth of experience in this area. You've worked with all these TEDx speakers and so on. What are some of the biggest challenges that you've helped people kind of overcome, or perhaps even biggest flaws in what they've been delivering and how you've kind of overcome those?
The biggest challenge is that often, because we know so much about our subject and we are also so close to it, then we think that what we are communicating is simple for the audience to understand, clear for them to follow, engaging. Often, sometimes, the experience from the audience's perspective is the opposite. It's confusing. And I'll give you an example. And this is something that I borrow from a fantastic book from many years ago, Made to Stick by the Heath Brothers, which is all about how to make your idea stick in the minds of your audiences. And in their book, they mention an example which illustrates the number one problem in communication. They call it the curse of knowledge. And I agree, I see that all the time with our clients, the curse of knowledge. We know so much that we find it difficult to explain it to our audiences. Now, in 1990, a psychology student asked two groups of people to play a game. You had the tappers and the listeners. The tappers had to tap out rhythms to famous songs on a table. And then so think about very famous songs like Happy Birthday to You, but instead of singing the songs, they just had to tap them out on a table, just the rhythm. And then the listeners, they just had to try and guess the songs. Before the experiment started, the student asked the tappers to guess how many songs they thought that the listeners would have guessed. And they estimated 50%. So that was their guess. Now, reality was very different. The listeners only guessed 2.5% of the songs. So instead of 50, 2.5%, massive difference. Why? Because if you are a tapper, you have knowledge that the listeners don't have. If you are a tapper, you have the songs in your head. And so for you, you find it very strange to understand why can you not guess the song, because you have it in your head. But if you are a listener, you don't have the knowledge, you don't have the songs in your head, and so it's not obvious at all. And this is the number one problem in communication, if we think about it, the curse of knowledge, which is our inability to imagine what it means not knowing what we know. Once we know something, now it could be a song, it could be our idea, our message, our product, our service. It depends on what your context is. But once we know something, we find it hard to imagine not knowing what it means. And if you think about it, we see that challenge everywhere. We see between professors and students, between writers and readers, between salespeople and buyers, and we see between presenters and their audiences as well. And it's very easy to fall into this trap unless, on the one hand, you have foundational, you understand what the fundamental principles of communication are and you know how to apply them. And also, it's very easy to fall into this trap unless you find a way to get access to some sort of an external perspective.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it's certainly something that I've struggled with and I've seen others struggle with, is that, as you say, it's the, in fact, one coach once described to me is you have to meet the audience where they are. And I think that's so wise and yet so tricky to do, as you say, once you've got that kind of curse of that knowledge, because you need to get out of your own head and get into the audience's head, which incidentally is another tip I once got, is when going on stage, the temptation is to focus on what will they think of me. And actually the trick is, remember, they're not there to think of you. They're there to get value for them. So instead, focus on what's the value to them. And actually the fear of what they think of you drops away, which is really interesting. But that's really cool. And so, I mean, you know, you work with these amazing speakers. They deliver this incredible content. One of the things that I've seen derail even excellent speakers can be the surprises, whether it's the timing is off or the technology is off or the screen disappears behind them or they get a question or a comment that throws them off. Are there any, when you're coaching your clients, are any techniques or anything that you kind of encourage them or give them to deal with those in the moment, just like distractions, curveballs?
For me, Alexis, it goes back to being prepared. If you are prepared, if you own your content, if you know exactly what to say and when, again, without memorizing. You were saying earlier that for you, for example, when you tell a story, you don't like to tell it the same way, using the same words all the time. Absolutely, I'm not saying that that's what we should do. But if we have that level of preparation, then it's going to be much easier to be spontaneous. Now, it may sound counterintuitive, but the more you prepare, the more you practice, the more you rehearse, the more spontaneous you will appear, and the easier it will be for you to be spontaneous, to adjust in the moment. So a lot of people tell me that they don't want to go through that level of preparation because they think that, for example, if they rehearse, then they'll sound robotic. And I don't know if I can use certain words in this podcast, but so I'm not going to use them. But let's say it's not true. Okay. So it's not true that if you rehearse, you'll sound robotic. Now, Chris Anderson, in his book TED Talks, he uses a great analogy. He says rehearsing is a bit like climbing a mountain. If you climb a mountain and so you start going up and then you'll stop, you'll never get to the top. So you need to keep climbing, so that you get to the top and then you can start going down. Say, for example, that you have a presentation coming up and you rehearse once or twice and then you stop. Of course, you will appear robotic. And going back to your question, you will find it hard to adjust things in the moment. Mm-hmm. But when you appear robotic, it's not because you have rehearsed. It's not because you've done the preparation. It's because you haven't done it enough. You need to keep climbing, which means that you need to keep rehearsing and preparing a few more times so that you get to the top of the mountain. And getting to the top means internalizing your message. Now, in my experience, Alexis, I see two types of speakers. You have the memorizers and the improvisers. And there is no right or wrong approach, by the way. There's only the approach that works for you. Now, memorizers like to have a script word for word, and they like to follow their script. Improvisers prefer more freedom on stage. So first of all, it's important to understand where we are in this spectrum, because it's a spectrum. So for example, I'm maybe 70% towards the memorizers. That's where I am. But you may be, I don't know, like in this spectrum, maybe 10%, you are more of an improviser. I don't know. But we need to know where we are, because that has implications in how we deliver our presentations. But it doesn't really matter whether we are a memorizer or an improviser, but I would always encourage anyone to rehearse a number of times. And especially for improvisers, it doesn't really matter if every time they tell their story, for example, like in the case, they tell it using different words or in a different way. Whatever you say will be much more powerful the fifth time than the first. And again, their level of preparation from any perspective, from a message perspective, from a delivery perspective, will also help you adjust in the moment.
Love that. Yeah, I think that's so powerful for anyone who's fearing those sorts of derails, because I think because we've all seen it, right? We've all sat in a presentation where you've seen the speaker completely thrown off by what to them is a major thing. Like, to them, it's, well, the slides weren't working, or the clicker's not working, or the whatever. And yet for the audience, it's like, none of that matters. Like, we're just here for the amount of time that we've been allotted. That bit's not going to change. And we're here to learn. And I think like some of the most memorable presentations I've seen have been where it's, you know, there's been a technology car crash and they just go, yeah, I'll, you know, let's just talk. And in some cases, they know the content well enough to be able to do it. In other cases, they then just improvise and have this kind of storytelling and conversation, which is probably better than what they're going to prepare. So yeah, I completely see that. That's awesome. I mean, you've, based on your work with other speakers, is there a particularly rewarding experience that perhaps you've had? Maybe a speaker who was struggling particularly kind of with what they're doing, or maybe someone whose message that you felt particularly needed to be seen by the world, and what was it like kind of going along that journey with them?
Yeah, great question. So I remember a couple who worked with me a few years ago, Jesse and Seb Walker, so she's from the UK, he's from Germany, and they are also the co-founders of a company called No Planet B. And the reason why I mention those is because of the message that they wanted to communicate. They still do it also on various platforms, LinkedIn, and they're very active there. And they are very much into like sustainability and using business as a force for good, which is very much aligned with what we do, how we do things at Ideas on Stage. So for me, it's two things, Alexis. One is, I'm super passionate about all things communication, public speaking, but when I have an opportunity to use those skills to empower people who then want to use their voice, their communication, to make a positive impact in the world, that's the most rewarding experience. So for example, and I don't want to, just because you asked the question, because otherwise this thing is not even on our website, but I'm a huge fan of business as a force for good. And so, for example, we have a project. It's a social impact project that we call Kids on Stage. So the name of our company is Ideas on Stage, and this project is Kids on Stage. So what we do is we've aligned our brand with goal number 4 of the UN Sustainable Development Goals, which is quality education, because education is very much aligned with what we do with our clients. And for every client, for every new client, we pay the school tuition for an underprivileged kid so they can go to school. And I believe, Alexis, that we can't, it's like before, we said that we can only control what we can control, right? From a public speaking perspective. Even in this case, I can't control someone's background, but we can use education to level the playing field so that someone's past doesn't dictate their future. So we do that in a very small way in a company, but even more importantly, then it becomes a positive ripple effect when we have an opportunity to work with clients who do want to use their voice, not just because they want to grow their business, or maybe they want to distress their business, or they want to make an impact, they want to increase their credibility and reputation, all of these things, that's great. But if they also want to use that to make the world a better place, that's the most rewarding experience. And I've had the experience a few years ago with Jesse and Seb Walker from No Planet B.
Nice. No, that's so cool. Cause I agree. Like when you've got a message that you can see it has the potential to have big impact and do good things for people. And then, I mean, as you say, and you're doing that with your own business as well, I think it's really powerful. So it's brilliant. Well, unfortunately, we're coming up for time. It's been so good to get your insights on this really scary, stressful area for a lot of business owners. I'm sure that now that they've seen some of the ways in which that they can address that, I think that hopefully it'll create a bit more calm, a bit of relaxation, and a bit more productive way of looking at how they can deliver presentations in the future. If you were to leave us with perhaps a suggested resource that someone can check out if they want to learn more, what's the best way in which they can learn more from you, Andrea?
Oh, thank you. So a resource would be the Confident Presenter Scorecard, which is an online tool that people can use to very quickly assess their own. So it's a self-assessment exercise. Mm-hmm. They can assess their current presentation skills against some fundamental principles of communication. It takes less than 3 minutes. It's free. They just need to answer a few questions. They'll get a score. And once you take the scorecard, that will also tell you what the score means for you. And it also identifies opportunities for improvement. So the link is our website, which is ideasonstage.com/score, like when you score a goal.
Yep. Fantastic. I'll make sure that's in our show notes. But thank you so much for joining me, Andrea Puccini. It's been great talking to you. You've provided such great insight, and we'll make sure we share your social media handles and all that kind of stuff in the show notes as well. To everyone else, like, if you're thinking, you know, I'd love to be able to do this, but I can never take the days out of my day-to-day business to be able to speak on these kind of stages and, you know, do this kind of marketing, never mind the 10 rehearsals that I'm going to need to do, then you need to free up time. You need to reduce the reliance of the business on you. And if you would like help with that, then please do check out a masterclass that I ran on how to free up 15 hours a week and unlock your growth. You can find out more and get the access to the recording for free at airmanual.co/webinar. Otherwise, finally, if you found today's content valuable, and I'm sure you did, then please just take a minute, leave us a review or share it on social media and tag us in. Andrea and I would really, really appreciate it. It genuinely makes a big difference. But otherwise, Andrea, thank you very much for joining me. It's been great having you here. And to everyone else, until next time, have fun.